Bron grinned. There's a pot shop I know in Flea Bottom, makes a savory roll of brown. All kinds of meat in it, I hear. Welcome to the White Wolf Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitewolfpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinoza. I had to go with Flea Bottom for the quote of this pack. I thought real hard, you know, Ryan, I love you, but I just couldn't do anything about the Iron Brink this week. Greg remains the queen of love and beauty of my heart, so I had to go Flea Bottom for this review week.
Also, the Iron Bank quote is actually the name of the freaking card, so we're going to read that quote when we read the card.
That too. Good point. I think that pretty heavily telegraphs that we're going to be doing a review episode this week. It'll be a little later even than our normal with the new system here, but I wanted to rush out last week's episode so we could talk about the main buzz and controversy out of Gen Con as soon as possible after that. So.
Wait, hit Oberon. There was controversy at Gen Con? That never happens.
I know. Go figure. Hey, at least there wasn't any in Origins this year.
Huh. Because there was no Thrones.
Exactly.
Was there any ETX, though?
No, Patrick knows what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah, I think that was pretty straightforward. I think the most controversial thing I heard out of ETX was that some folks were surprised about the best 2 out of 3 finals.
Oh yeah, I forgot that. That is a bit of controversy.
But that's a positive, right? Like
it is. It's just the surprise factor. Like, can FFG just let us know what's happening? Isn't that hard?
I mean, yes, it's actively impossible, judging on past history.
Actively impossible. There's no way to communicate.
I can't even imagine how they would go about that. Remember last year at this exact time when they came on this very podcast and swore to us, like legitimately promised us that this new way of communication was coming right now?
Yep.
Good promise, guys. Yeah. I appreciate you.
Well, moving on from that disappointment, let's get into happier grounds, because this is one of the most amazing chapter packs I think I have ever seen in second edition. But before we dive too far into that, I do want to give our third voice a quick moment to introduce himself, because it's the first time that he's been on the podcast. So, I mean, you know, at this point, I'm Will, also known as Kenan. Everybody's used to hearing my voice. Everybody definitely knows who Aaron is by now, whether they want to or not. But our third voice is a metamate of Aaron's. That would be Scott. So, Scott, how'd you get sucked up into Game of Thrones? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So, if Aaron is in the meta anymore, I think he's on the internet's meta.
We all know he plays more than he lets on.
But I used to be a Netrunner player and playing Thrones super casually in 2.0. A lot of people started to quit Netrunner as the design decisions in the game got a little bit less popular and
demonized.
Really, I was one of those people as well. I became good friends with people like Aaron and Roy. So Thrones became the more serious than the casual game. And Netrunner kind of fell out of being played as the cards changed. I think that's a simple way of how I got into Thrones. I think I'm somewhere in between, like, a Dan Struhl who doesn't care at all about the IP and the Nedliest of Nedly players. So I don't really care too much about having good uniques, but it's nice that it is an IP that we can all relate to. So I think it's somewhere in between that approach to the game, but mostly the game not being broken and going down a bad direction like I saw Netrunner going.
Nice to meet you, Scott. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Past tense. Ooh, yeah, what just happened to this friendship?
It's over.
I mean, me and Aaron talk almost every day, so I think...
Yeah. And I'm seeing you tomorrow, so...
So I think it'll be fine. The community in Thrones is a lot better than community in Netrunner, too. That's something I'll give credit for to people like yourselves, Will and Aaron, that you guys grow to foster the community and make it more inviting than I think a lot of other game groups do.
I mean, for every person I've made quit, I mean, probably I've made more people quit than play. But thank you anyway.
Net. That's not good.
Definitely netting negative at this point. It's okay.
Well, in that case, maybe we go back to trying to turn our attention to positive things. Sound like a plan?
Did I just get called negative things? Ouch.
Well, you know, net negatives are, well, not positive, right?
That is, by definition, true.
Exactly. Technically correct is the best kind of correct. And technically, the only kind.
Also true. Mm-hmm. All right.
So chapter pack, right?
Let's talk about the best chapter pack. Not in the game probably ever, because Valor came out, but like in a really long time.
But the rest of that pack, I don't know, was at the same high level that this one is through and through.
As a group collective, this pack will probably average each card probably a B+ or something ridiculous.
Yeah. No, there's a couple...
The Valor pack, the average card was probably a relatively average number, right?
Yeah. It's just there's so much good shit in this pack. It's completely crazy.
Well, let's go ahead and dive in on him then. Who wants to jump on Stark that's not me?
Scott, you're new. Go for it.
Perfect.
Sure. I mean, Stark is pretty good in this pack, surprisingly. So first we have Bran. Stark, loyal character, 3 cost, 2 strength with a power icon. He's a lord. And he has the action, kneel Bran Stark to choose and stand a direwolf character. Until the end of phase, that character gains challenge icon of your choice. And we have passing the Black Gate, which is a 0 cost Stark event, not loyal. And it is the marshaling action, kneel your faction card to reduce the cost of each Stark character you marshal this phase by 1. So I've been surprised by this Bran. I didn't think he'd be worth ever playing because there is the core Bran. But he is surprisingly good. He can't be hit by the Targ plot. And he also makes your direwolves have a little more bite. I've seen some people playing that 6 cost direwolf with Intimidate, which gives you another icon with Intimidate, which can be really good for Stark. And just more aggro goodness with is how Stark is going to win. If they win, they're still probably by far the worst faction. Passing the Black Gate, I'm a little bit 50-50 on, because the kneeling of the faction card hurts Stark fealty, which is still probably their best build. But they need the econ so bad that an econ event like this is probably really good. But overall, I think it's a positive for Stark in this pack.
I know Roy totally adores Passing the Black Gate. He thinks it's exactly the card that Stark's been waiting for. And, like, most of what Stark Fealty's Nilia's Faction card is for is to reduce the cost of a Stark character that you marshal by one. So being able to get, like, multiple Stark characters out for cheaper is going to be amazing, especially if you can figure out how to, like, get that rush build going. You should be able to really be able to flood the board.
Yeah, this is definitely good for the rush build, but is it good for the aggro big guys build? I'm not convinced. So you're getting the discount, which is nice, but at a card disadvantage rather than the fealty, which would reduce one of them anyway.
Yeah. So,
and Stark isn't that great a draw either. They have Gates of Winterfell, which is great, but that's about it.
I mean, they could run. They have what's his name though, that no one runs.
Roderick.
Yeah. Yeah, Roderick and Blackfish. Yeah, everyone runs Blackfish.
The thing I'm wondering, like, this isn't loyal, right? So I'm really wondering if there's some kind of false banner deck that may actually turn out to be more interesting and tasty here. But there's a lot of good Stark stuff that's not loyal. You know, Eddard, Arya, Bran, right off the top of my head. That just makes me wonder, you know, if you're missing card draw, maybe you're looking the Tyrell direction. I guess, you know, this income reduction can, or this cost reduction can offset the income reduction of a pleasure barge or something. I don't know. I'm just spitballing, but I think the fact that it's not loyal opens up a lot of possibilities.
It remains to be seen how present it'll be, but, like, it's at least, like, if Stark is good, this has a place, right?
I think it
might not be enough, but it has a place.
I think it's still a rush Stark card. Like, I'm not convinced that you want the card disadvantage in a big guy's deck.
I don't know. Like, I've never been especially great at Stark big guys. That was always, like, John or Roy's area. So, maybe, but it's just, like, if you can run a couple of this as, like, your 10-11-12 econ plot, or 10-11 econ plot if you run two, and then, like, oh, sorry, econ cards in deck, and then you can cut an econ plot. Like, a lot of the problem that Stark Big Guy's deck, I think, had was they had to run so many economy plots. And, like, you need plots that do things at this point in the game's life cycle, which has really helped to hold Stark back. And this is a cards that do something. You know what I mean? Like, this opens up that extra plot space for cards that do something.
Yeah, no, I agree. I also think we're nearing the place where faction card Neil actually means something, right? Like, yeah. Before, historically, it's been pushed as a mechanic that it's actually a cost, but it hasn't really been, right?
It was for Lannister.
But now we're getting Iron Bank in this pack and this in this pack, and Stark Big Guys definitely wants Iron Bank. Like,
oh, yeah.
So, let's say you're running 2 and 2, that's 4 cards in your deck that need a faction meal, then you're definitely not running fealty. And there's times where you're going to have to choose between one of the two. And if you want more money, Iron Bank will get you more money and save your guys from Valor, which is one of Stark's biggest problems.
Man, Stark's going to cross with the Lords.
Yeah, I don't think it's bad. I think it's just a big question mark about how good it is. I think it's great for Rush, but for the aggro-ness, I'm not convinced.
And okay. We should probably talk about Bran at least a little bit before we move on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because I'm not super up on direwolves in general, but I think this is probably much needed for them. Of course, you know, the icon granting, and I feel like some stand capability could be useful here, get some extra intimidate or eat multiple people with Grey Wind. But is that enough to, like, pull it together as a cohesive deck?
No. I mean, very simply, no, right? Like, direwolves aren't there. They're not especially close to being there. But if they're ever going to get there, they need a card like Bran.
Yeah, no, he's a utility piece. I don't think he's bad. And depending on the meta, he might be good if you're just running, like, 2x Grey Wind and you have Summer and stuff. Like, a 1 or 2x Bran might be good. But we're not in a meta where, as we saw at Gen Con, that the only thing that matter are characters, because that's what direwolves are good at, is killing things. But
yeah.
You gotta worry about these locations now, which direwolves have no answer to.
I mean, if a direwolf deck exists, I would guess it's Stark Lion with that location that can give anyone an intrigue icon.
That might very well be true.
And then, like, you've got that, this, that, and this Bran. And, I mean, it's fragile, right? Like, I don't know if that works. But, like, you need a way to get other icons in that deck, and that's a way. I don't know. I think that's this Bran is a good combo piece. I don't think it's a great card. I don't think it's as good as Core Bran in a vacuum. But I think it's a really good combo piece.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's more of a Shagger card than a Jamie card. But it could eventually be a Jamie card in some deck, maybe.
Yeah, I could see that.
So what kind of rating do we give Stark then? It sounds like maybe we're kind of at the point where we throw one out there.
I'm going to go B-. I don't think, like, Roy would probably be higher. So, but, and I'm taking, since he loves Stark so much, I'm taking his opinion pretty heavily into account because we've discussed this card and he loves it and plays a lot of Stark and thinks that passing the Black Gate is necessary. I think Bran's a good combo piece, so that's E-ish. But when you combine the two, I think I'm comfortable giving it a B-.
I'm about at that spot, too. I think passing the Black Gate will be eventually good in a Stark Rush type of build. We'll see about the aggro build. And I think Bran is decent right now, depending on how much Targ you see. You might run him over the other Bran, just so you don't get hit by that plot. But at that point, he's a 1 or a 2x. But he'll go in some decks, so I think he's a solid card that'll see some play.
I think I'm higher on Blackgate here between the two. Brand's okay, but I think awfully niche to try and supplant the much more broadly applicable Core Brand. So, you know, if I'm given Stark as a whole a rating here out of this, I think I'm probably only going to give them like a C+ at the moment.
I thought you were going to be higher. These seem like your kind of cards.
Black Gate, I think, tentatively is. But I'm just not feeling Bran.
Huh, fair enough. All right. You should probably read Tyrell. You love them.
Okay, Will. Sounds good to me. All right, so we've got Sir Garland Tyrell. Of course, he's unique. He's not loyal. He's 4 cost with military and power icons, 3 strength, knight, and lord. He has bestow 3 and renown. Sir Garland Tyrell gets +1 strength for each gold he has, and action. Discard 1 gold from Sir Garland Tyrell to choose a Tyrell character. Until the end of the phase, that character gets +2 strength. And then we also have Olenna's Machinations. This is going to be a loyal event for 2. Challenges action, you may initiate an additional intrigue challenge, or sorry, an additional power challenge this phase, max 1 per phase, and reaction after you win an intrigue challenge by 5 or more strength. Pay 1 gold to return Olenna's Machinations from your discard pile to your hand. I feel really good about these for Tyrell. I don't know how often I'm going to bother with investing extra into Garland, but even just his base body, dodging first snow and having that built-in renown, I think it is worth it as a 1x for me. Plus, of course, very favorable traits in Knight and Lord. But Elena's Machinations looks so tasty and tempting there. Like it is a little off-putting maybe that it forces you kind of into 2 challenges, but I think that Tyrell's icon spread and strength boosting abilities and such definitely means that they could do both of those challenges if they want to. I'll be interested to see if there's some kind of crossing build that wants to use this, either to double up on a power challenge as their 3rd challenge for the phase, or maybe even potentially hit 4 in the phase. You know, anything that offers extra challenges always has a lot or at least a potential for a lot of impact, I think. And I think the cost on Elena's machinations is definitely low enough for it to be playable, plus the ability to turn it infinite, so to speak, to keep returning it, gives it a lot more upside potential. So those are my first thoughts.
Man, I'm so sad Wama's Champ card came out before mine. Because if I know anything about how Wama plays Tyrell, I'm going to bet that he was very turned on by Elena's machinations.
I thought you were going to comment that Garland looks a little bit like him.
Does it?
I kind of think so.
Really, a little bit. Yeah, I can see it. But no, Elena's machinations is like the Wama-iest card I've seen in freaking ages. It's also great, which helps. Garland, I don't really care about the bestow. You do it if you have the extra gold, and if not, then he's just a fantastic body. Like, 4-for-3 renown. Like, yeah, you take that every time.
He's on renown. I think he's the most solid without bestow out of this little cycle of four costers we've seen, isn't he?
Yeah, I could see that. The Greyjoy thing. The Greyjoy.
The army. Yeah.
Yeah, good that point. Sort of makes its own bestow thing happen.
Right.
That's a really good card, too. But yep. One of the two, right?
That is.
I don't know. Like, these are just fantastic cards. Tyrell Rush is already basically there, right? It's like, it's not like it hasn't already won major tournaments. It's not like it's not great. And this is just such an amazing tool for that deck. It's such an amazing way to get a bunch more power. Like, you don't even care if you never get it back because it's max one per phase. It's nice if you do, but like, just having that threat of activation all the goddamn time on every intrigue challenge you initiate, that you could get this back and then you could be ready to like power and close immediately, changes so much about how your opponent has to play once they know you have this. Yeah, this is an A house.
Yeah. And I know I'm probably going to be the only person to advocate this out of the current batch of co-hosts I have right now, but as if Tyrell wasn't already, you know, pretty much king of melee in general, that extra power challenge is going to wind up being pretty bonkers.
Wait. Melee is not a real format. We finally got our proof. Sandy was at a final table.
Are you knocking Roy's performance?
No, I'm actually not. Roy. I specifically said Sandy and not Roy. Roy also owned in a...
But by extension...
Roy also... No, you can be good and be... Like, if you're good in both, Sandy's just, you know, Sandy. Because he clearly was drunk, right?
He was working on it.
Drunk,
put it that way.
As you'd expect him to be. Luke was a lot worse.
It's hard to get drunk in Gen Con. I've done it, but like, it's not easy.
Yeah, careful.
I mean, or you just have to have a really big soda cup. It's not like anyone's looking in it. Yeah. So, melee. LOL.
Scott, any thoughts on these?
Any thoughts? I think you're underrating the bestow on Garland. I think it's still really strong, especially with Randall in the rush build. Like, this is another way to stand Randy, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're facing Targ, you can get him out of range of a Drac, or you can even get him out of range of a Drac and a Blood, or a Drac and a Danny, this negative. So that's really damn good. And if not, he's still just a good Renown body. Elena's Machinations is a really good rush card. I don't think it's going to see any play out of there. It is a tad expensive otherwise, but, I mean, in rush, all you need is an extra power challenge once, right? And that could change the game, especially with Randall. He'll win both of them by himself. It doesn't matter. So, yeah, really good, and I still don't even think this is the best house in the pack.
Oh, no. So what's your grade?
I'd give it an A... Or A minus, I would say. I think Elena's Machinations will definitely see play in Rush, but I think it might change the way you build depending on the gold curve. And Garland, I just think, is a one of in every Tyrell deck until the other Garland comes out.
What other Garland?
The Tyrell box one. He was spoiled in the preview article.
What is it?
I admit, you know, I forget off the top.
He's
of my
knights head. Attacking a Lone Garland, so if you're playing a knights heavy deck, you can raise the claim by discarding a card or something like that.
Oh, wow, yeah, that is really good.
But claim raising is generally strong.
Yeah.
So if you have to choose between two, depending on the deck, you might play the other one.
Okay, fair enough. I like that, because I like Garland, so cool. And I like that even though this is a very good efficient card, it's not just auto-include forever.
No, yeah. For sure. The other Garland is really good, too. He's just more niche, I feel like.
Yeah. All right. Will, your rating? Did you give one?
You know, I don't think I actually did give him a rating. I think, you know, I like both of these quite a bit. But they're... gosh. How do I wind up rating this? I think probably A-. I mean, Garland's just going to be everywhere. Elena's Machinations, I think, just has such open-ended kind of potential there to force games into a very high pace that I think this is a great pack for Tyrell. Everything they want and more. Aaron, I guess that sends you to Night's Watch then.
All right, let's get through Defender of the Wall quickly because no one cares that it exists. Defender of the Wall is a 2-for-2 military icon. It is non-loyal, ranger, no attachment except weapon. While Defender of the Wall is defending, it gets +2 strength. Good for Defender of the Wall. No one cares. However, mutiny at Craster Keep. Night's Watch, for some fucking reason, unloyal, cost 0. Dominance action. Choose a character with the highest printed cost among characters you control. Sacrifice that character to choose a character an opponent controls and discard it from play. Mutiny changes the game, like, immediately, right? Like, it's a better defining card.
It is ridiculous. I love that it exists, because I don't like all the big guy decks and dupes, but, oh my god, how did it get through playtesting?
Non-loyal, right? Like it's strong enough as a loyal card. Non-loyal, it's just like... well, I have a Raven and a Steward of the Wall, so I'm going to get rid of your Tywin. That's amazing.
Yep. I really wish it had some kind of restriction in the targeting on it. I just think it's so bonkers. Or if it had maybe been some other faction rather than the faction that is already, you know... So easy to curve out at the very bottom of the curve. This is just bonkers. I mean, we're already, I think, to
super the thematic
where Hand's Judgment should just be everywhere, and I think Mutiny just keeps us in that place.
I mean,
it isn't even a faction card, Neil. Like,
yeah,
we're just talking about how faction card Neils are becoming a thing and a real cost, like. I'd pay 2 of faction card Neil for this in a lot of decks.
In every deck that could run it, right? Like, I don't see why you don't run 3 of these in every Night's Watch build. Like, I mean, I guess maybe not a Jon Snow build, but probably even then, like, I'm not seeing why you're not running this everywhere forever. It's the best kill spell in the game.
I mean, it doesn't kill, it just discards. You can play your Tywin again. So you don't
Fine, the best discard spell in the game.
It is the best discard spell in the game. I'll give it that.
So, is this good or bad for Varys?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Good?
I mean, you can get rid of Varys, right?
Get rid of your opponent's Varys?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean... Unless they've got the Hand's Judgment sitting in hand. I don't know. I mean, we can go back. Yeah, you can go back and forth in that. Well, if they've got and I've got, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think the easier and better analysis to look at here is what can I do with it? And I think using it to knock off dupes and then Last of the Giants in Varys to fully clear things is going to be pretty strong.
Yeah. Or just Varys, hold it for a turn, and then next turn be like, oh, you thought you had a board? No.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, this is going to set up such... Yeah. Exactly. Go ahead. Scott?
Yes.
I thought you were saying something. I'm sorry.
I just said decks with March the levels too.
Yeah.
If you really want a board clear and they got two characters on the board, mark, you get rid of one with this, mark the other one. Oh. Passive power game, if we didn't already won Gen Con now, and this just makes it that much stronger.
I mean, right before you're going to first snow, you get rid of that one big dude and bounce their board. Like, this just has so many applications.
Yeah, I mean, this house, I'm going to go and... I'll never play Defender at the Wall, but Mutiny, I think, already gets this to at least an A-, just because this is the card, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's an F card and an S card, so I'm going to give it an A. The upside is so high. Will?
I mean, I think I'm right there. The Defender is just so blah, like, that we've barely mentioned him. Come on, at least they could have given me the chance to dream about throwing a bunch of icon-granting attachments on him or something. But no, he's wildly outclassed by everything else. But Mutiny, I think, more than makes up for that, and is just another huge tool for a house that's already doing really well. So, gosh, I think Mutiny is going to be so potent that I'm willing to go ahead and give Night's Watch an A rating out of this pack, despite the Defender.
All right. Right, all right, all right. Who wants Barra? I just did Night's Watch, so...
I'll do it. We got Stannis' Cavalry, which is a non-loyal Barra card for a cost for strength. Military and power icons, the army trait, bestow 8, no attachments. And as the text, each character an opponent controls with cryptic cost, X cannot stand during the standing phase. X is the number of gold Stannis' Cavalry has. And standing action, move 1 gold from your gold pool to Stannis' Cavalry. Limit twice per phase. And yeah, right? And Northern Encampment. Barra loyal to cost location, the north traded and limited. Northern encampment cannot stand during the standing phase unless you have one dominant. Marshalling action, nail northern encampment to gain 2 gold. So this might be the best of the econ locations.
Nah.
It's super strong. It pays for itself first turn down heat.
Yeah, absolutely. But like every Barra deck doesn't want to be a Dom deck, right? So if you're not running a Dom deck, this is only good instead of amazing. In a Dom deck, it's just unreal.
I agree, but I think most Barra decks in this current meta want to have a Dominus module. I think it'd be better if they could be more spread out, but unfortunately they can't right now. So most are going to play that's going to be amazing, but there are a lot of banner to Dom Barra decks too, so in those matches it's not that good.
Well, another factor I think as far as the encampment goes is that the drawback on it is one that your opponent can fight you for on the board, you know, with the normal tools kind of at their disposal. When you look at something like the targ location, I mean, characters are going to die eventually, and there's not that much that can be done to keep a dead pile, you know, totally empty. Or when you look at like the Tyrell location and you know, summer versus winter plots, like that's a deck construction decision that they need to have already made before the game started. But Northern Encampment being based off of dominance, you know, they can see that there and they can actually vie for that against you. I mean, sure, you're planning for it yourself if you're using this, but it's not maybe as automatic as some of the other stuff.
No, I mean, I think it's right up there in top 3, though. Still, it probably is 3rd. In the top 3, I think the Night's Watch and the Tyrell are both better.
I think the Martell one's better.
I was going to say, I'd put the Martell.
You're right. So maybe it's 4th. definitely better than the Tyro one. Not the Tyro Legion.
Yes.
The Tyro one is garbage. But Stannis' cavalry is ridiculous. Being able to control stand is exactly what you want, and it doesn't affect both players. It just affects
one. Yeah, isn't that crazy? Like, when I first saw this, I thought it only affected both players. I was like, all right, that's good. No, it just affects the opponent. Holy shit. Oh, that's crazy.
And you're only going up, right? I mean, a lot of good houses really rely on one cost spot, right? Not that Stark is good, but we used to always complain about Stark having just a 6 cost. This will completely annihilate that. But, I mean, if you're controlling the 5 cost against Targ, that's really good. There's a lot of good 5 costers. But also the 6 and 7 cost, if you're just controlling Drogo, Khal Drogo or Dany, that's good. That does require a lot of gold. So if you're just controlling some wings too, that's still good. It's just always good. And if not, it's a 4-for-4 bicon. That's still fine. Like, this is going to be a 3 of in most Barra decks seen played for a while. Plus, it's non-loyal. So you can get all the Tyrell or any gold you want and throw it on this guy and throw some more challenges.
I mean, it's the bestow 8 seems like a lot, but A, it's no attachment, so you don't have to worry about any bullshit with it. And B, like, the move 1 gold from your gold pool to Stannis' cavalry and standing twice per phase means that you can just take your time and figure out what the biggest threat is.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go backwards, but you usually don't want to go backwards. You want to go forwards, I mean.
Right, and then once you hit the right number, you just leave it. Like, you get it to about 5, and then you're just making decisions. It's just, yeah. And like, oh my god, this owns Night's Watch, right? Like, Night's Watch, you're just like, alright, well, all your guys are 3 cost, so no one ever stands again.
Yeah, I mean, what I do like about it is it encourages different cost slots in your deck. Just to avoid this, if you're seeing a lot of play and you're worried about this, which I think is a good thing, but it should affect both players, I think. I think if it affects both players, I'd still play it a lot. Just affecting one player, I'll play it that much more.
Yeah. Will?
I mean, I don't know how much more there is to really say about the cavalry. I think most of my basic thoughts on the encampment are already out there, but the cavalry, I think maybe the only other thing jumping out at me is, you know, it's non-unique. So I think it is definitely conceivable to have a couple of these out set at different price points, which is probably just gonna end things there if it hasn't already. But I think it's really good. Barra is looking really strong out of this pack as well. You know, unless you invested 8 gold into this and then they mutiny it away, that could be a bummer.
This could be the pack that gets Barra back to really being competitive main house tier. I think it has the ability. They need a little extra money, and if you're in the buy module, you're gonna play this. You're gonna get your money. It might not be the best, it might be the 4th one, as we said, but that's still really good. And cavalry does everything Barra wants done. It just makes more things melt, so makes your Bob bigger, and makes other people not have any challenges. And you can just even-handed and mellow your way to getting some other things through. It's exactly what they want.
Yeah. I think this is an A house. So, of the houses we've now get, this will be my 3rd A of 4.
I don't think it's over yet.
See?
Yeah.
We said this was going to be a big, big pack. I feel like I'm maybe a little further down on this. I just think you're going to have to be committing a lot of resources to making sure you're using the two of these effectively, as good as they are. So I think I'm going to probably bump Barra down to just a B+ out of this pack, but it's still really good.
I'm still at the A. I think Northern Encampment is better than you guys are giving credit for as an econ location. It might be the 4th best, but
it's still great.
Fourth out of eight puts it squarely in the middle.
Well, also, like, it's never bad for you, right? Like, and at worst, oh, even if you never win dominance, it pays for itself.
Right, right. It's then you've just blown a card slot and nothing else.
Yeah, so that's what makes me think so highly of it, because it paid for itself turn one, which none of the other ones can do. Guaranteed.
Well, Martell gets close, at least, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not guaranteed, though.
Right.
And the cavalry, I think, is just ridiculous, and because of the other ridiculous cards in this pack, people have looked past it, but it's ridiculous, too. And it's going to win games. Right. So,
if it didn't have the standing action, which sounds dumb, but you know what I mean. If it didn't have the standing, I don't think it would be nearly as good. That you can just randomly move gold to it later is what takes it over the top.
Yeah, it has the Wex Pike ability, but you actually care about it.
Yeah, exactly. Alright, can I do Lannister because I hate Greyjoy?
Go for it.
Sure, I mean, you get the worst house in the pack.
Oh yeah, by far. Case Merchant, House Lannister, non-loyal. 2 cost, 2 strength with an intrigue icon. Merchant, bestow 3. Reaction. After you collect income, discard 1 gold from Case Merchant to gain 2 gold. Blech. A task for every tool. 1 cost Lannister non-loyal event. Put a Lannister character of printed strength 2 or lower into play from your hand. These are both really, really bad and unplayable. And this is an F house.
Yeah, me and Will were talking about this a little bit before the podcast. There might be a tool for this task someday, but it isn't here now. The best we were able to come up with was Will suggested the Surprise Tickler, which, although cute, still really
bad. Janos is your best play for this.
Surprise Tickler, too.
Janos is actually good with this.
There you go.
But that's still a little too shaga for my liking. I'm still never playing this in the current iteration of the game. Maybe there will be a character that will make me play this. Maybe we'll get a great Sir Pounce. That'll be 1 or 2 strength, or 0. It'll be awesome. Also, a surprise Lancel might be nice at times.
Yeah.
But it's not worth playing, this card. I think maybe something Shaga will come out of it, so I'll give it the... What's your Shaga rating? It's the E, right? So maybe I'll give it the E, but it's probably just an F.
I think a task for every tool. I used this line earlier and I can't help but reuse it now that we're actually recording. Has potential in the future. It just needs that correct tool to use with it. I don't think now is the right time for it, but it's definitely a jumper sort of card that I'm going to be keeping my eye on for the future because, you know, it's the first one of these that we've seen that doesn't discard the character afterward or kill in Heron Hall's case, which intrigues me. So we just need just the right 2-cost character for it. So I'm keeping my eyes peeled. The Case Merchant, though, looks pretty unequivocally terrible. And I have 2 thoughts related to that. One is, I had to say, Case, who or what the hell is Case, and go look that up. They're evidently a banner house of the Lannisters. There had to have been a dozen others that could have been picked for Case. But most importantly, is it just me, or does it actually look like it should be Casey Merchant and be some sort of like pop star in the vein of like Katy Perry? Like, that just looks like a pop star name. That's all
I was thinking. I was thinking the art looks like anime. Like this.
It does.
This art looks so out of place in this game. Not that we'll ever see it on the table, but why did we pick this artist, and why are we having this art in Game of Thrones?
Somebody just got done watching Full Metal Alchemist, and they were really excited. You know, it happens.
So Greyjoy.
Whoa, I didn't give Lannister a rating.
It's a D. Okay, go ahead.
They get a D.
Really?
I'm hedging my bets a little bit on task. So.
I mean, I don't know. If it didn't say Lannister character, it would be amazing with Beric.
Oh, there's a lot of fun stuff you can do.
In general, I find tons of uses for it.
Oh, yeah.
But I was thinking maybe that that maester that they have, the maester on the rock, but it's three. Surprise maester doesn't come.
Yeah, no. There's nothing there. It'll get you, oh, what's his name? The other maester, the corset maester.
Oh, Pycelle? I mean, Pycelle's good, but the surprise offer of insight?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. All right, next.
I guess that's me, right?
Yep.
Greyjoy. So the important question is, do we actually read these, or do we just kind of say they're cards and move on?
Oh, I don't think they're just cards. Yeah, I think Iron Victory is real good.
Man, you guys are just totally, totally whiffing on me wanting to continue Banter's joke, but oh well. Okay, so here we go. The actual cards. We've got Newt the Barber. He is going to be a 5-cost unique. He's loyal. He has military and power icons and 4 strength. The Ironborn trait, of course, and the pillage keyword. And then the reaction, after a character you control discards a card using pillage, return a card from the losing opponent's discard pile to its owner's hand, then draw 1 card. Limit 3 times per phase. And then we have Iron Victory. This is a 2-cost unique location. It's loyal, worship trait. And while you control Victorian Greyjoy, he gets +1 strength for each power he has. And reaction, after a Greyjoy character is saved, that character gains 1 power. Limit 2x per phase. I think Greyjoy comes off looking pretty good here. More draw capabilities for them. Newt has some interesting flexibility. I mean, of course, you're going to be giving them the worst choice back from their discard pile when you desperately need the draw, and more card advantage is great for them. Iron Victory is going to be good. You know, Vic is already so great and so hard to remove them from the board. And that Intimidate can be so potent. Now he's going to be able to intimidate even harder. And then when he saves himself, he's going to immediately reclaim another power. He just doesn't leave the table at this point, right? And this applies to other Greyjoys now. You know, whenever you need to throw an Iron Mine and an Asha or Risen from the Sea on Balin, you know, just... I think that incremental power gain is gonna creep up to help them seal the deal.
What do you know? What gets picked off that table? Mutiny at Cressa's Keep.
Yeah.
I mean, Newt's a one of, and basically every Greyjoy deck, right? Like, even if you choose not to use the ability, he's still a solid body that you're not against having. And Iron Victory is probably a one-off in every Greyjoy deck because, like, even if you don't get Victarion out and or you don't see it, like, fine. And at worst, it's just going to give you a like some real acceleration toward winning the game. Like, what more do you want?
Yeah, you probably these are get good cards. 2 or 3 power off of it pretty easy.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's only one, like that extra 1 power in Greyjoy is often huge in putting pressure on your opponent.
Oh, it's gigantic, and it does let Vic save himself a little earlier if he gets that power, and Valor is coming.
Yeah, if you know Greyjoy is rushing, like, can you even afford, and like they pop an Iron Mines and have this out, can you even afford to ever military them? Or do you just kind of shrug and go, well, not doing that shit?
You may have to. I mean, and Greyjoy already was so tempting for the offensive Valor. Now if I'm pulling power out of that arrangement as well... That could really be the turn you you close a game out.
You would get the power before anyone dies too, right?
Yeah. Wait, no. Yes.
It's a reaction to an interrupt.
To the interrupt. Yes.
So like you would get the power. So like if you're at 13 power, you Valor.
Yeah.
2 Iron Mines. I'm at 15, and oh well, fuck. I would have lost, but now the game's over.
Oh,
also, this effectively says using Victorian's ability now only costs 1 power.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really
strong. Once you get him to the threshold. You got to get him to start with. Yeah.
Yes. And if you used it already twice in this phase, then you don't get the ability. But 9 times out of 10, it is saying, instead of discarding 2 power, you may discard 1 power, which is still really good.
Well, and it's just per phase, you know? So you could be saving with Iron Mines or whatever from a Valor in the plot phase, and then when, you know, challenges roll around, your opponent's back to looking like Aaron was saying, do they even military you when you can just blow 1 power off of the Vic to save him? I don't know. This has a lot of application, I think.
Yeah, I mean, warships are going to be a thing. We're going to have the boat stack.
Well, a different type of boat stack, but yeah.
I don't know what the boat stack was in 1.0, so.
It was kind of like a wall deck.
There were
boats.
Yeah, that one, definitely.
It was basically a wall deck.
Fair enough. This is not a wall deck for sure. This is the antithesis of a wall deck, but it's still be good.
So what are you guys thinking about Greyjoy as a whole here? I feel good about them, but maybe not quite as bonkers as some of the other stuff. Man, it's good. I'm leaning...
I think it's a solid beat, right? I mean, both these cards are going to be in play. They're going to be in deck.
Yes, yeah. So, I think I'm at the B+ range for these.
I'm at a B. Scott?
Yeah, I said B. I think I'm running at least a 1-up in every Greyjoy deck from now until when the Greyjoy box comes out. Then maybe they'll get enough cards that make some of these 1-ups leave, but they're really good.
I thought he was just calling on you to kick you over to the Targaryen cards.
Oh, I can do that too, if that's what you wanted. So we have Eerie, a unique non-loyal tower character. Cost 2, strength 2, intrigue and power icons. Companion and Dothraki traded. Bestow 2. Action, discard 1 gold from Eerie to choose and stand a Lord or Lady character. Limit once per phase. And Overthrowing the Masters. Targaryen event, 1 cost, not loyal. Action, during a challenge in which you are the attacking player, use the defending character with strength X or lower and earn from the challenge. X is the number of characters in the defending player's dead pile.
Man, that's good with Mary.
So Eerie is basically a better handmaid, right? And that is good. Handmaid is kind of falling out of favor of being indexed, but I think a 1 of Eerie is probably safe in most hard decks for a long time. Mm-hmm. If you don't bestow her and just can play her or set her up, it's a 2/2 icon, which is totally reasonable. And with upside, work with Dana. And if you have banners, other ladies...
Works with Drogo too, right?
Yeah, works with Drogo too. I was about to say that. Illyrio as well is a lord. Viserys, I guess, is the other lord in the house. I'm not sure if they have any others. But still solid. Always fine as a 2/2. Can't complain about that. And Overthrowing the Masters helps you beat people when they're down, right? If they're trying to get past one of those 2 military challenges, you're going and they already have a bunch of guys dead, you can stop that from happening. My problem is, in the deck slot scenario, am I going to find a place for this with all the great events that Targ has? I'm not 100% sure on. But it's still solid.
Yeah. I really, really enjoy Eerie. She's a 1-of forever. I think Overthrowing the Masters is a Dan Strahl type of card where you think it's kind of bad, and then it just wins a bunch of games. Like, I think it's going to be way better than we think.
Yeah, I don't think it's bad. I just think there's so many event slots on Targ, it's hard to play.
Yeah, I don't think it goes in every Targ deck. But especially things like Mini Curve Targ, or like if you're trying to get Miri going, if that ever becomes a thing again, that's going to be very strong.
What do you think, Will?
I think I agree there with Aaron that Overthrowing the Masters is probably the type of card that is going to surprise us at its power level. I don't think it's going to be that hard to get the number of dead characters up to a point where it's hitting relevant strength characters. And this type of ability that just flat removes them from the challenge as the defender, I think is the sort of thing that, like, when this is good, it's going to be for some pretty blowout plays, whatever those wind up being, whether that's forcing a Miri through or allowing you to win by enough strength for, a put to the sword or, just slipping through that power challenge unopposed to win the game. Whatever it might be, I think this is gonna be a blowout play more often than not. And Eerie is just a wonderful utility, I think. I mean, the fact that she's not loyal, like, what house do I not have Lords of Ladies that I'm going to want to stand?
Night's Watch, yeah.
Yeah, one Look out funny. Of eight. and all of the others, I can just think of all sorts of fun things that I would like to do with multiple challenges or whatnot, be that Fast Eddies or Tywins or Red Vipers or, Standy Randys, Renlys, whatever it might be. There's just piles of stuff that I'm willing to invest a couple gold into Eerie and get multiple uses out of. So I think she's one of the most kind of straightforward bestow cards we've seen so far that just made me go, yep, I think there's a lot of games where I'm willing to spend four on her because I will get the value out of that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going B. I think these are just straight up good cards. It's a B.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable.
I'm less sold on overthrowing than you guys. I think I'm at B minus. I think overthrowing can have some niche spots, but buying that event slot is hard, and it's becoming harder with more and more good events.
I mean, Targ eventually needs a deck that's not a burn deck, and I think overthrowing goes in that deck.
If we get Dark Wings, this goes with that.
Yeah, well, every event goes in the deck for Dark Wings. You're just like, what events do I fit? All right, Martell? The Red Viper is a loyal Martell character. 6/5, all three icons. He is a lord and has renown. While the Red Viper is attacking, each defending character with fewer than two challenge icons does not contribute its strength to the challenge. Then there is... this is a whole paragraph, huh? Dorna's Revenge is a non-loyal Martell event, cost 1. After you initiate a challenge, choose a character controlled by the defending player. That character must be declared as a defender for the challenge if able. If you win that challenge by 5 or more strength, the losing opponent must choose and kill the defending character. That event is completely useless. It's got way too many restrictions. However, the Viper is great and basically immediately slots in as a one of in most Martell decks.
I basically echo your sentiments exactly. If you're not playing combo Martell for the other Viper, then you're playing this Viper. And he's really good. He's a one of in most Martell decks, unless the curve is too small, I think, where you're playing that Viper. So solid, and I think the event's just bad. There's no reason to ever run this.
Like, if you didn't have to win by 5, it'd be good, right? Like, but it's... So... The character has to defend if it's able. That's fine. That's probably good, but eh. If you win the challenge by 5 or more, the losing opponent must kill a defending character. Not even that character. Like, if they had defended with 3 people, they could... You know what I mean? Like, eh.
It's too much, and as we were just saying, for event slots and Targ, event slots in Martell are just that bad.
Yeah, I think they're worse.
Probably so. I mean...
Burning.
Good luck finding a slot to fit a good event in.
Yeah.
Let alone this.
Burning, Venomous, Vengeance for Elia. I mean, I know Venomous is an attachment, but it goes down in an event slot, right?
Yeah. Because
you don't really want to set it up.
I mean, they're nearly as tight on event slots as Targ is, I would think. I think tighter. This is, I would say, pretty fact worse than... whatchamacallit, then overthrowing the Masters? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I even think Confinement is a good event. I just think you can never fit Confinement.
What card?
Confinement from back in the
court. Oh, yeah. Confinement's still a good card, yeah, and it's gotten better. It's yeah. just how. Like,
exactly.
how do you fit that, yeah. Viper, though, like, Viper good.
Yes. He is good.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Viper. This is what I wish the core set one had been, you know? Like,
yeah,
something with a broad application instead of the pretty narrow one that the core Viper has.
He's not a Shaga combo card, he's just a good body.
Yep.
He was going to win challenges unopposed and going to get renowned. And that's self-pass people, that's what he, well, not self-pass, but get passed. He's an icon, that's what you want.
And I like that does not contribute its strength so that they can still defend. And you can be like, sorry. Or like, and you can do lots of mid-challenge removal of icons and stuff like that. Good stuff.
I also like the nemesis of how he works with the mountain.
Yeah.
That the mountain can't defend him.
But the mountain can attack him and crush his head.
Exactly.
Ha ha ha.
I think C+. This is, I don't know. They're better, like... Viper is really good, but Thorn's Revenge is really bad. Eh, B minus. Viper is probably good enough for a B minus all on his own.
I think I'm at the C plus. I think the Viper is good, but I like how often does Martell want to keep any character on the board for super long? They want to reset and get characters off the board, and the Viper will fall to that. So a renowned character, while nice, doesn't mean as much as it does in other houses, right? It means yeah. a good amount less. So. He's a great character. I'm going to run one of him, but unless I'm closing, I don't expect him to stay around the board.
I could see that.
What do you think, Will?
I don't know. I'm just kind of looking here back and forth between the two of these. I mean, on the Viper... himself, I think that ability is less likely to be relevant than a lot of other things we've seen in the game. Just how often are we really seeing single icon characters at the moment? Not really. Which
Martell will make single icon characters.
Well, yeah. Which means you're relying on him or the attachments to do so. The attachments are. I would say kind of out of favor lately with the prevalence of Night's Watch. So I don't know. It feels like it's kind of stuck in a bit of a loop. But he's definitely worthwhile as a 1X for me just based on the icons and the renown. I mean, there's folks playing Mance just for that. As much as I disagree with that particular idea, being neutral. But here he's a point cheaper and in house, so I think it's definitely a worthwhile card. Thornish Revenge, just not feeling it. I don't know. Martell, I think as a whole, I think I'm actually maybe feeling them a little less than some of the other houses. I think I'm just feeling a B minus total here.
The way to get these one icon characters, right? I mean, there's going the other ways. Right now, there's Nin, which is one of the two characters that they care the most about in the game, besides Ariane. And we're getting that spy that was spoiled, I believe, by you guys recently, right? That when you ambush it in, a character loses an icon?
Yep.
Yes. Yep.
Not when you ambush, when it enters play.
When
right.
it enters play. So Flea Bottom 2.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
So there are going to be more ways to get that one icon, and there's going to be a lot more triggers with that that Martell's going to love with this Flea Bottom out. So I think getting that off isn't a question. I think it's more like there's only one character that I consistently care about and say that will consistently be there, and that's Ariane. So we'll bring it back to our hand. Everyone else, they're not sticking around.
I mean, not if things are going well.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if things are going well, like maybe, see, like Sometimes you, with Martell, you have so many events and so much stuff that you just get control of the board and you don't need to keep resetting, even if you have the ability. And, like, I feel like Viper really shines in that situation where he makes it so, like, the game ends before it becomes an issue. He's also going to be really, really good if Martell Reigns is ever a thing, and I don't think it's very far off. I think that Martell Reigns loves this Viper. Yeah. Well, yeah, really. But no, like, even, like, think about how good he is in Martell Reigns, where, like, if you have Nim on the board and, like, they have to try and defend with, like, fucking three people just to stop him, otherwise, you know?
I mean, I agree on that, Rock. He is very good. I've been playing a lot of Martell Fleabottom lately, basically the deck, and he is really strong, but I never really want to have someone on the board for too long. Besides, I'll keep Nim around because she makes Fleabottom that much better, and Ariane will just be coming in and out, so she'll stick around. But everyone else probably won't stay on the board. Okay, Will, do you want to take it with the neutrals?
I'll do Begging Brother so that Will can have Fleabottom, and then
hooray!
Begging Brother, neutral, 3/3, intrigue power, the 7. Bestow 3. Interrupt. When the effects of a triggered character ability would initiate, discard 1 gold from the Begging Brother to cancel those effects. I think this is one of the best cards in the game.
It's quite strong. I mean, Treachery has been one of the most popular cards in the game since it came out, right? And it's Treachery for characters on a neutral stick anyone could have.
Which Tyrion is Gold, pretty big. Miri, Varys, Melisandre, Jon Snow's Stand, Fast Eddie's Extra Power. Like, almost everything that's not a passive thing, like Drogo's Second Military.
Well, and I think this is the sort of thing you don't even necessarily have to invest all the way in. I mean, if you've got the extra gold, sure, I don't see a downside to investing the extra in. But I think this is one where a strong play a lot of times is to only put the 1 gold on it and then sit on that threat of activation for that key play. You know, you're worried about the Varys coming out or the Gaston Grey or whatever it might be. And you just sit on the Begging Brother and you know, dare them to try it. And then you don't have to spend the other 2 gold, you know?
Can this stop Dolores Ed? It's a faction, Neil. Yeah, Christ.
Okay, I mean, wait a minute. Dolores Ed's put into play. Okay, this is where you know, playing the game for too long causes a problem. So in second edition, Dolores Ed's ability, while he's in hand, still counts as a character ability?
I have no idea. I'm going to assume yes, because
this was first ed, I would say no.
Yeah, no, I know that. In first edition, it definitely doesn't stop it.
I'm assuming it is a character ability, because Treachery does definitely stop Dolores Ed.
Oh, well then, yes. Then yes.
That answers it. There we go.
Begging Brother is going to, like, I don't know why you wouldn't put at least 2 of, but probably 3 of in basically every deck. Like, yeah, I don't care what, like, I mean, I guess not Rush. Yeah, fair enough. But short of Rush, like, there's just not a reason not to run 2 or 3 of these.
Does,
he stops Randall Standing, he stops, the strength bump of, what's her name?
He stops Marge Searching at her.
Yeah,
playing against that version.
He's crazy good. And also really, really good with Fleabottom.
Oh, yes.
So that's
yes.
2 gold. Just grab it when you need it.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Is he good enough that by dint of having the 7 trait that he makes the high septum more playable? You know, blow a cancel or 2 off the Begging Brother, then use the High Septon to redirect something and potentially off the Begging Brother once you don't care about him anymore.
Begging Brother,
that seems a little melee-ish to me, right?
Yeah, I could see that. I hadn't even been thinking about Melee at that time.
It's just when you said it, I was like,
hit enough 7 characters for him to be practical, but that could be fun in Melee.
We're getting close to on the 7. But yeah, I mean, Begging Brother is an S.
Viper Viper ran is something, right?
This yes. totally turns off Hyper Viper. You play him with 1 gold, and then you just shrug at Hyper Viper like, I don't know what you think you're doing.
Oh, yeah, Begging Brother does turn off Hyper Viper, for sure.
Yeah, right. Of course.
Yeah, I thought Scott was asking if Hyper Viper played a High Septon.
Oh,
that's what I was asking about.
Oh.
Turn off Hyper Viper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, just from a flavor perspective, that the 7 are pretty obviously the kind of just say no trait, right? Like, you've got Catlin that just says no. You've got this one. You've got sort of the High Septon. You've got the plot supporting the Sept. There's the, what's the one that makes everyone get rid of their gold? Like supporting the set.
Yeah, supporting the faith.
What's the character? There's the character from the, I think it's the Lanny box.
I don't remember.
I don't know. Anyway, similar sort of all the 7 cards.
Without Free Rider?
Yes, there we go. Yeah, just interesting to me to see that they're kind of carrying that theme out. If it's a 7 card, it's going to really mess with your opponent wanting to do something.
I think this is an S, which is the second S card in the pack after Mutiny.
Oh, another one's coming.
Yeah.
Another 2 are coming.
Exactly. I give it an S as well.
I can't say no to that. It's an F.
All right, read your buddy's card.
Yeah, okay. This is past world champion from 2004, Greg Atkinson's card.
13 years ago.
Yeah, I know, right? First Gen Con he went to, if I remember correctly. He may have gone to 2003, but I think this was his first.
Were you not there?
No, this was the year before I went. I started going in 2005, the year after this.
Oh.
Him talking about how awesome Gen Con was got me all jazzed up. So some of you may know he's a former co-host of the show and actually the original mind that was like, hey, maybe we should start a Game of Thrones podcast. So props to him for that. But this is Flea Bottom. This is a unique neutral location for 1. It has the King's Landing trait, and the challenge is action. Pay 1 gold and deal Flea Bottom to put a character with printed cost 3 or lower into play from your discard pile. At the end of the phase, if that card is still in play, place it on the bottom of your deck. Now, before I get into the ability, I do want to just throw out one other interesting anecdote about this card, because most folks will look at these various champ cards, like, say, the Blackfish, or the Iron Bank will have its due, or whatever it may be, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I see the likeness of that champion in the art. You will not see that in Flea Bottom because, well, for multiple reasons. Greg was never in the original art for Flea Bottom. And, hilariously enough, this is not the original art for Flea Bottom. They lost the original art in a hard drive crash. So at some point after the very first set it was in. And so it has been different art every time it's been brought back into the game since then. So interesting tidbit that no one else but me cares about.
It's ugly art, too, just like Greg.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. There's a connection. But the ability is insane. This is the sort of like high-value kind of combo-y, a little bit shaggy thing that I really see out of Greg. Also, for listeners, this is wildly different. It was just a character cost reducer in the CCG in the first edition of the LCG. This is far more interesting, and I'm worried. I'm honestly worried about this because this puts a huge crimp on what sort of enters play abilities that FFG can put on anything 3 cost or lower. from here on out. And even the stuff that is already available is so good.
I think it's already busted with what's out.
Yeah.
I think very specifically, like, almost every house wants it, but Targ, Martell, and Night's Watch just, like, holy shit.
Targ, Martell. Even aside from them, you know, Barra can cycle even Vanguard Lancers or something, you know?
Yeah.
Vanguard Lancer is ridiculous with this.
Yep. Vanguard Lancer, apparently, since Gen Con results happened, is just ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
Game 6 power to 3.
I can't believe that we're seeing this at this cost point. I mean, yes, it does cost you gold every time you do it, and you have to kneel it. But it doesn't use that faction card kneel that we've been talking about this episode. And Flea Bottom itself only costs 1 gold to put into play. I really seriously have this sort of ability... you know, expect this to be like a 4-cost location. You know?
Restricted feel... list.
Yeah.
Like, I posted and everyone was like, you're crazy. And then a few hours later, they're like, oh, never mind. Maybe there's a point. No, this card is fucking nuts. Like, it's so good.
It is completely ridiculous. Like, in Martell now, I want the lower plops. Not that I didn't before, but I want to get things on my discard. I want to get that Southern Messenger in my discard. I want to get an Aereo in my discard. I just want them there, so then I have my toolbox ready to go, and whatever I need in the challenge, 1 cost, let's go.
Are there any good ways to self-mill in second edition?
So you don't want to mill, you want to discard. I see what you're saying. Mill, magic.
Yeah, the Magic the Gathering, discard from the top of your deck. Pillage yourself, I guess, in Thrones.
No. But
yes, a little bit. Tywin can do it. The bad Tywin that no one plays. Can't he? Am I crazy?
No, I don't think so, because he just modifies the existing pillage.
Yeah, he just lets you choose between the existing pillage.
Ah, my bad. Does how about anything with the Tyrell stuff?
No, they all put stuff like shuffled back in or onto the bottom of the deck.
I don't think there's a way to self-mill, but I think Martell, if they didn't want to play 2X March before, wants to play 2X March now.
Yeah, well, Targ has that location, the plaza, and Night's Watch has the steward. What's his name?
Old Forest Hunter.
Old Forest Hunter, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So if you've got the draw to back it up, you can at least chuck stuff from hand pretty quickly.
New Garland, when it comes out, that we were talking about before, can do it. He'll discard to raise the claim.
You're also just going to lose cards sometimes, right? Like, you're going to lose intrigue challenges. You're going to be at reserve, if assuming that you're, you know, not just flooding the board. If you're playing a stall deck, you're not.
The Hound.
I mean, the Hound himself in the discard is just hilarious.
It's also ridiculous with... Remember that card we all said was horrible, the name of that horrible podcast? But now that card is ridiculously good.
Oh, that card is amazing with this. Holy shit, amazing. Do you know what card that is, Will?
Nope. Mm-mm. I got Kinsons. Nothing. I didn't realize they were a podcast.
They shouldn't be, is the problem. But as long as, I don't know, Roy is ridiculously persistent, I guess we're going to keep making episodes.
Good on you guys.
It's really just Roy. Roy's like, when are we doing a podcast? And everyone's like, we figure out a time. But yeah, Second Sons, like, is a 3-of with this card, right? Like, it discards itself, you shrug, and you just get it every single turn. A 1-for-6.
Well, not quite every single. I mean...
No, every single. It doesn't go to the bottom of the deck.
Oh, yes, you're right, you're right.
The forced interrupt happens first. It rediscards itself before any of that. So it's just, you keep playing a 1-for-6.
Yeah, you'll never before that.
Yeah.
Unless you want to bring in Quaithe during that challenge phase instead, which is totally fine.
Or Jorah. Or which one called? The one that discards itself.
Surprise, Drakkar.
wait, or the one that stands Dany, which you can now do basically every turn.
Oh, Handmaid?
Yeah.
Handmaid and
yeah.
Every single turn.
Yep. There's so many things.
Belwas for a quick save.
Maybe too many. Maybe yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe for the moment we should just all agree this is an S+ and move on to the next card. Because if we really just sat here and tried to
this is a new rating.
Do with this, that's another hour of us, you know, crafting stuff, right?
If we should do an episode on that, that should be next episode. What crazy shit can you do with Flea Bottom? So this is a new rating. This is an RL.
An RL?
That's yes. An RLJ. No, just an RL. It's a please give us an RL so that like I have to make a decision and don't just stick this everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
From the FFP perspective, though, this is going to sell chapter packs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, three is not enough of this because you really want at least two and basically... Like... People don't understand how good this is just for the fucking claim soak, right? Like, forget all the cool stuff you can do. Just saying, well, I ended up marching something cheap earlier, or I lost an entry challenge and lost blah, and now that's just a crappy card in my discard pile, and like, well, that's claim soak now. For one gold. You
know what event is a good event?
Yep.
In the name of your king? And in the name of your king requires a faction card, Neil, like we've talked about? And it requires that gold that you would have spent. And it is card disadvantage. And now, this does that.
Yeah.
It's not going to get you the unopposed. It's not going to stop the unopposed, but it's going to stop the claim soak.
Yep.
It won't get past two claim, but it'll get past one. I mean,
it's just,
I'm not playing in the near king.
Yeah. I mean, I still might, but yeah. No, it's crazy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, Night's Watch just... all right, we got to move on. Yeah, RL is my rating.
next card.
The most S out of any of the S cards in the pack. And that's not to say anything bad about the other S cards. It's more S.
They're all S cards. I don't even know if... this is crazy with Begging Brother. Like, just two gold, and you're like, by the way, no, go away. Forget your really powerful combo that you were trying. I don't even care if you discarded it to intrigue. Like, it's just fine. And then you get claim soak and a challenge out of that, too.
Is this good with that renown body and Barra? Do you close?
I thought about that. Maybe. But it's not quite as good as the Second Sun, since its drawback has it change control rather than discard. So, you know... I'm still always a little worried, especially if I'm pulling it out of discard and I'm not investing in that bestow. You know, I'm worried that could backfire. I don't know.
They're just... I'm going to use Bran every turn. Or at least have the potential to. Thanks.
Right. At least have him there and sit on him just to keep them from doing anything.
We haven't even talked about Arya, who is also just nuts with this.
You mentioned him earlier, I thought.
Yeah. It's just...
Arya Stark?
Oh, sorry, I thought you said Arya, not Arya. My bad, I misheard.
Hota's ridiculous with this, but Arya Stark stays on the board.
I mean, Stark has a plenty of sacrifice. You know how Jon Snow wants to be standing that whole board by sacking Stark characters? Well, you only need one Stark character in your discard pile. And the chain has begun. You can do it every single turn.
Yep. Also makes For the North look a lot more tempting when I'm just bringing a Chud back every turn with this to sacrifice to it.
Yeah, Summer.
Yeah. Also fun.
All right, we got to stop.
I know, right, that's what I'm saying. We can do this for an hour. Let's move on. Who's reading the Iron Bank?
That is Scott.
I'm reading the Iron Bank. Mm-hmm. Sure. So this is the net last S card in this pack. The Iron Bank will have its due. Neutral event, zero cost, action. If it is not the taxation phase, move your faction card and return a character to your hand to gain gold equal to that character's printed cost. Until the end of the round, you cannot marshal or put into play any card with the same title as that character. So this
Wait, you missed a part. Car design by 2013 Melee World Champion Ryan Jones.
That's
okay. So, yes, Ryan, your champ card has been discussed at length multiple times, probably on this podcast too, because it was spoiled by yourself from that FFG article. And it is a ridiculous card. And going in probably 70% of decks for the rest of the game's lifespan.
Well, it'll rotate out.
The rest of the game's lifespan before rotation.
There you go.
But yeah, just the amount of things this allows you to do and the amount of situations this is helpful in is just ridiculous. At least this does have that faction card, Neil, as we talked about, which is becoming a real cost because of probably this card. This is probably going to be at least a 2-of in any aggro big guy deck, or just any deck who wants to move around money and save people from Valor and do whatever else. This is just really good.
Yes. I mean, what's there to say? Also works really well with Flea Bottom.
Yeah. Flea Bottom, works well with the Lanny Harrenhal, reuse any number of comes into play abilities, be that, whatchamacallit, the, I always forget, what's the Tyrell army that discards people?
House Florent Knight?
Yeah, there you go. Though that may not be great, because now you're just giving your opponent Flea Bottom fodder when you do that, but,
you're trying to hit big guys, right? You're saying,
Well, it's hard to hit bigger guys than the knight itself. So that's tricky, but...
I mean, Dacey Mormont, I guess, is as big as it can get. No, actually, Barrack, is it Barrack. Printed?
Yeah, it's printed. Can definitely discard Barrack, which is hilarious. Because, really, fuck that card.
So, I don't know. Like, I think the only downside I see here is that this does not have the East trait, which I really wish it did. But it's really wordy, so I don't know how they would have fit it.
Yeah, it's a paragraph. It's a bonkers good card, though. And thankfully, hopefully, probably gets rid of most terminal negative attachments like Milk, which I'm really ready for it to not be in the game anymore.
Yeah. Man, and thinking about stuff like that, if you're using it that way where your main goal is the return of the character rather than attempting to use the gold for something... the way this is phrased, returning the character is part of the cost. So even if this gets Hand's Judgment for free or brand or whatever, you still get the character back, which is not a downside, really.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for confiscation not being a must run in plot decks.
Yeah. I mean...
What else do we say? Like, it's nearly as crazy as Flea Bottom.
I think that might be stretching it. I think Flea Bottom is just too ridiculous.
I think this is almost as good as Flea Bottom just because of how it affects the metagame. Like, deck construction has to change because of things like this and Mutiny. And Begging Brother, right? Like, you have to... And, by the way, all of these, every single one of these cards... is amazing with my champ card.
Which one's your champ card again?
Valar Dohaeris.
Ah, okay.
All men must be put to the bottom of
the deck. I thought it was just the mayor. I thought that was the name.
Either one is fine. My champ card is really what it's called. So, like, but Iron Bank, you're just like, all right, well, I'm going to get rid of that. My one big guy... At the end of the round, I won't get the benefit of the gold, but then I'm going to Dohaeris, and then I can just replay him, and my opponent didn't have that option. Flea Bottom, when you have to give up all your little guys, hopefully you have another little guy in your discard. Like, Begging Brother, for obvious reasons, cancel good, and he's cheap. Like, all bestow gets better. And Mutiny, get rid of that one big guy that they chose to keep. It's a whole new game.
I think out of all these cards, though, like Iron Bank will have its due, is the best for the game.
Yeah, I could see that. I think it's a very healthy card.
like, it makes the game better, right? It makes you never feel safe. It makes you be able to play around more things and have more tricks, but not in a broken way, just in a good way to keep everyone thinking and honest. I think some of these other ones, like Flea Bottom at times, can be bad for the game.
I think Flea Bottom is too much. I think Flea Bottom is just too strong. I don't think the others are necessarily. Begging Brother is very strong, but the game probably needed that cancel. And Mutiny just needs more of a cost. I don't think it's bad for the game in and of itself. I just think it's, like, zero cost is a little silly.
Yeah, I think in consideration it's bad for the game because of the price point. But I think if it cost two, I think it'd be really, really good. If it cost one, I could live with it more. And I think Flea Bottom is just too ridiculous with all the common playabilities and everything it does.
You Iron Bank your most expensive guy, take him back to hand, and then Mutiny with whatever little guy you have left.
You can do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Iron Bank is just strictly good for the game. Yep. So I'm happy with its existence. Good job, Ryan.
All right. Last card?
Last one.
Wheels Within Wheels. Neutral plot. Income 4, initiative 1, claim 1, reserve 7, plot deck limit 2. Search the top 10 cards of your deck for any number of events and reveal them. Add 1 to your hand and place the others in your discard pile. Shuffle your deck. It's fine. It's a good, whatchamacallit. Basically ends up being summons for events.
Well, not exactly, because it gets them into your discard too, so the synergy with Annals is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. It's very good. Like, if you're not running Annals, though, it's basically summons for events.
Yeah. I mean, and you don't have to find the other events and toss them, so...
Yeah, for search for any number. So you can be like, oh, my other number was 0.
Yep.
So, yeah. Nope, this is a solid B card, I think.
Yeah.
Does Reigns fit it? Because I don't think Reigns does.
I think it depends on the Reigns, right?
Well, of the 3-4, I guess, that really see play, I don't think it fits in any of them.
I don't know. I mean, you were mentioning earlier about the Viper and maybe Martell pulling something together. If they do, I could see this having a home in a Martell build.
Yeah.
I mean, so great... Rayjoy Reigns is a thing, and I don't know, that event is really good. We do not sell.
I never heard of it. Yeah. You could get this, and you could be just going to grab saves and stuff too. Yeah, I could see it there too. Yeah. Okay. I mean, Lannister has fucking treachery, right? Like, going to grab treachery and tears, I hear, is pretty good.
Yeah, so if you get an unopposed with Rayjoy Reigns, you trigger this, then you We Do Not Sell. Like, that seems strong.
Yeah, it seems good. Alright, fine. B plus.
Sure. So, I was just saying, if I was Rager Reigns, I could definitely see playing this because of that play. So, I probably am at a B plus because, as good as it is right now, I think it will only get better. If you're playing an Annals type of combo deck, it's very good there. If you're playing Greyjoy, it's can just be find We Do Not Sow, and We Do Not Sow, or get ready for your Valor, and with your Iron Victory, get an extra power when you save with that Risen you just found. So I think it's very strong. It probably is a B-plus card.
I like it. I think it's one that is definitely fighting for some real limited slots, I think, in the game at the moment. I like the effect, and it's definitely one that scales upward a lot as we get additional events and potentially another combo-y sort of deck, like you said. But at the moment, I think it's fighting so hard that I have trouble rating it higher than maybe like a B-.
All right, so final question. Is this the best chapter pack in the game's history?
Yes.
Is that even a question, really?
Yeah, I just wanted it said explicitly. Yeah, this is the single best chapter pack ever. Like, only one house got less than a B.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure the average of this is like a flat A, right?
Yeah.
Maybe A plus.
Like, if a new player comes to the game, you tell them, get a core and get this chapter pack.
I'd probably still take three cores, but then this chapter pack.
Yes, you know what I mean? Like, this comes before a deluxe box and importance. That's something for a chapter pack.
Yep. There you have it, guys. That's Oberyn's Revenge. Oh boy. Props and slops.
I've got a prop.
Go for it.
So I want a prop, choice of games. There are these like text-based choose your own adventure games. There's the Hero Project one I just finished playing because I was on a plane and I needed something to do, and it was completely amazing. A study in steampunk is like Sherlock Holmes meets steampunk meets, I don't know, it's really fun and interesting.
As soon as you said that name, you had me intrigued.
Yeah, it's really good. The one where you're a superhero I thought was going to be dumb, like I put off playing it for a while, and it's excellent. And then Choice of Robot, where you're like a grad student, you build a sentient robot. You can have it be like a medical robot, or you can end up trying to take over the world, and like it's really excellent. And for anyone who's interested, you also get to like, because it's interactive fiction, you get to basically choose your own character, and you develop their personality. You can choose to be a man, woman, trans, either way, non-gender identifying, straight, bi, non-preferential. Like, there's a ridiculous amount of open-ended options. It's fantastic. Highly, highly recommended.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Scott, you got any anything, you know, geek culture, life, you know, anybody that catch off on the road?
The Waking Fire on the way back from Gen Con, which is an epic fantasy book, which probably relates to this audience a bit. Really good. Started reading the second one on the way back from the plane ride. Highly recommended. I know Roy is reading it and is enjoying it. Not Thrones level enjoying it, but enjoying it. Basically about steampunk worlds where dragons have the power for some people. Their blood gives them unique powers, and everyone is searching for the rare white dragon now that has powers that are unknown to man. I don't want to give away too much, but very much recommended if you're in epic fantasy, which if you're listening to this, you probably are.
I want to slop, and it's perfectly appropriate, the worst episode of the Game of Thrones TV show ever, which is appropriately titled Beyond the Wall, because we all know nothing good will ever have that title. So, slops to Beyond the Wall, because that was freaking really bad.
Yeah, for the moment, for something brief like props and slops, I won't delve hard into spoilers, but that I will at least say that they have thrown the entire concept of time completely out the window. Well, let's go with time and space. Completely out the window.
I mean, and the characterizations are all just really weird and off. It just feels like it's a different show.
Yeah, they're just rushing to get it over with, is the way I feel about it.
Yes, 100%.
They're doing the Hollywood thing. Let's make like a lot of things that seem really flashy and
cool.
Get this over with.
Yeah.
Yeah, the showrunners want out. So bad.
They never saw, in fairness, in their own defense, they totally never signed up to do something completely original for this.
They,
right?
Like, they thought Martin would be done.
I mean, they were foolish to believe so.
I was going to say, they didn't do their homework then. ask virtually any fan of the books. They could have told them when the show started. The series is not going to be over.
Well, the assumption, I think, was that it would be over. Faulty assumption, yes, but still fair.
Yeah. I think it's fair to assume that in most circumstances, it just happens to be wrong in regards to martyrs. Yeah.
We should slap friend of the podcast George R. R. Martin too while we're here.
Friend might be a strong word. One-time guest is probably more accurate.
He's a friend of the cast. Definitely a friend of the cast.
Okay.
He listens every week. He's sitting there right now going, ugh, I know I'm trying, guys. Stop shit-talking.
If he's ever listened to an episode of this show, I would be just absolutely flabbergasted.
Yeah, don't worry. He probably hasn't. Almost certainly hasn't.
Well, if he has, and he, I don't know, happens to reach out to the email address, contact@whitebookpodcast.com, I swear I will straight up buy you a nice steak dinner, sir.
So just remember when you used to have Daryl do that every week? No one's done that in like 3 years.
Yeah, that's a problem. We also haven't talked about Google Plus in a long time. Do you realize that's still a thing?
It is not still a thing. It was never a thing.
No, I work in marketing. Your SEO is affected by your Google Plus.
What's an SEO?
Search engine optimization, search engine results. So Google is incentivizing you to care about your Google Plus.
They're pushing.
Google.
Ah, boy.
They haven't given up on that. So the main reason why I still watch the Game of Thrones TV show is I was curious and want to know what George R. R. Martin's intended endgame was, right?
Yeah.
But at this point, do we think it's the same endgame anyway?
Yeah. It won't be the endgame, but the ending, like where everything ends up, will be.
Yeah. Yeah. Like episode, you know, the penultimate episode and ultimate episode, I think, will probably have all the main pieces where they should be, but.
I don't want to give spoilers in case people haven't read stuff.
No, just say spoilers, take 2 seconds, and if you're still listening, you get to listen to spoilers.
Okay, so Aaron just gave your 2 seconds. I'll count. 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi. They haven't really gone into the Azor Ahai prophecy or anything. So coming into this, my theory was Jon has to kill Dany in order to beat the White Walkers, but that seems very improbable with the way the show is running things.
Yeah.
And also seems improbable they'll do anything in Azor Ahai like that Lightbringer prophecy. That death of a loved one, whatever.
Yeah, I feel like a flaming sword isn't going to end up being a big deal since everyone apparently has one now.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Just Beric and Thoros.
Well, rip.
Well, only one of them now.
You don't know. Well, Thoros could still have a flaming sword.
I won't delve too far into the theory itself, but I would say I pretty wholly at this point, you know, a few days before the last episode of this season, at least, I pretty wholly buy into the theory that it's going to be Jaime in the end as Azor Ahai and the Valonqar. So we'll see.
Let's see it. I still half expect Cersei to join the side of the dead. I expected her to marry the White King or whatever his stupid name is, Night King.
Did you guys see the little bit of rumor running around about what Cersei's plan might be?
No.
Evidently, there was some casting news for next season that I had missed until this article came out. Basically, this actor is has evidently been cast as something unrevealed, and a bunch of other Thrones people have started following him on Instagram and whatnot.
So the name Victarion Greyjoy?
Do what?
I was kidding. Is it Victarion Greyjoy?
No, it's Euron Greyjoy. I can't believe he hasn't actually been in the show yet. It's really mind-boggling. The like obvious theory is that he's going to be in a flashback as Rhaegar, because evidently the actress that played Lyanna in the flashback was one of the ones that started following him on Instagram. So they're like, oh, you know, they were in scenes together and that's why they now know each other, blah, blah, blah. But interesting theory here that they may actually try and pull in spoilers here for book five, folks. So I'm going to give you a second in case you haven't read it yet.
I mean, at this point, if you haven't read it, what are you doing?
When I started talking.
So that they may actually still pull in young Griff for the final season.
God.
Because Cersei has been desperately waiting on the Golden Company to arrive here in this season of the show. And, of course, in the books, Griff and young Griff arrive in Westeros at the head of the Golden Company. So the theory being that she's going to maybe offer to marry young Griff, who may or may not be Aegon Targaryen in the end, to try to solidify her claim. So I'm intrigued. I'm very intrigued.
With six episodes left, I just really hope not.
Seven at this point, right?
Right.
This episode and then six next season?
I can't believe they decided to do seven episodes this season because, like, they needed 10. They so desperately needed 10. All these time problems are solved if you just have 10 episodes and take your time.
Exactly. They just wanted out so bad. It really
was. They just want out. They're like, we have to do more. We still have to do more. We have to do six more. But I guess we'll see. So the reason why I said Victorian is none of you were there, I guess. I was talking to Sean Emberley at Gen Con.
And I was definitely not there.
Apparently, I finished the books. So, Sean, if you're listening, stop listening. You're great. But he thinks that Azor Ahai is Victorian.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah, I'm not feeling it.
It's just, it's not a Greyjoy. Because Greyjoys are terrible.
I mean, at this point, it's for sure not a Greyjoy with the TV show.
Well, the TV show. Ugh. The TV show hasn't even mentioned it, right?
They mentioned the prince that was promised like twice. Yeah. I don't think they've ever named Azor Ahai.
Okay. Stupid TV show. All right. So I feel like... No, I'm not even going there. Let's move on.
You know, I think we'll just wind up in the danger zone if we keep going down that particular route. Oh.
Ugh.
It was forced. I know.
It hurt. All right.
That
go ahead.
Closes this chapter of the White Book.